Hello and welcome to the Opening Bell, the Boxing News podcast. And I am Matt Christie, and I'm joined again. It's the third time in a row, isn't it?
I know. It's
by John
magical.
Dennehan. John Dennehan.
Are we recording now?
Yeah, we're recording.
Oh, is this it?
We're off.
Okay, I'm ready.
So, anybody that listened to last week's podcast will no doubt be eager to know what state John Dennehan is in this week. You've still got the crutch.
I'm down from two crutches to one crutches. I'm down from two crutches to one crutch. And clearly I'm an amazingly fast healer. Pretty powerful.
You are very, very powerful. And you went to the Matchroom barbecue, I understand, yesterday.
Did
the crutch get any attention?
It did. It was a real hassle because I prefer to eat with both hands shoveling food into my face, and the crutches were a real impediment to getting to the food, getting the food into me. But yeah, I mean, there was stuff going on.
Could you not have asked Eddie Hearn to help give you a hand, maybe?
I probably should have done, but we had Mark from Boxing News to feed me.
That was a nice sight, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit about what's happened in the last week. In terms of action, there was very little, and I think we will only touch on the main fight of the weekend, and that was Ruslan Chagaev's victory over Frey Oquendo, which was, from the moment it was announced, through the lead-up until the fight itself, I think the best word for it really all is farcical. There was talk this time last week that Shannon Briggs was going to be flown in to take Frey Oquendo's place, which kind of says it all really about the regular WBA heavyweight title. Chagaev won a 12-round decision, for those that are interested. In all honesty, as you kind of two guys on the way down, it served a purpose in that it eliminated one from the heavyweight picture. However, the fact that it would have been called a world title is pretty disgusting, in my opinion. What do you think, John?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, as you were saying last week, you know, I mean, we don't really need a regular WBA heavyweight champion, and if they really wanted one, there are a lot of good heavyweights out there, and Chagaev just isn't up there anymore. The whole thing is very weird. Yeah. You know, it appeared to be a big fight in Grozny, but
no, we have got,
I don't know.
We have got a ringside report in this week's issue for those that are interested, with a rather chubby-looking Chagaev punching the air triumphantly after his victory. Where he goes from here, time will tell.
David Haye?
Yeah, I kind of hope just really to kind of that he doesn't get a big fight on the back of this. I suspect he will, but I just hope that he doesn't, just so that, you know, that the WBA are aware that of what they're doing it does no good to the sport whatsoever. So let's move on. In other news, things that have happened in the last week were George Groves announced that he will return on September the 20th at Wembley Arena against Christopher Rebras, the European champion, who I must admit I don't know that much about. But he's ranked number 3, I believe, by the WBC and the IBF. And this is being billed as a final eliminator. In that respect, you have to say, all things considered, it's a good fight for George Groves.
Yeah, on paper, it seems like the perfect comeback fight. Rebras is highly ranked, but doesn't have a lot of stoppages on his record, so he doesn't seem particularly dangerous for Groves. Groves needs to get his confidence back, so it'll be interesting to see what he's like. But it seems the perfect comeback fight for him, because it'll get him, you know, should he win it, it'll get him right back up in the frame for another world title fight.
I was there at the press conference when they announced it, and Groves doesn't seem to have lost a shred of confidence that he exhibited prior to both of the Karl Frotch fights. What did he say? He said he approaches his boxing like a high-stakes gambler. Is it a dangerous approach? And he said he was very unlucky in both of those fights. Do you think perhaps, is this the right approach from Groves, just to not let any doubt infiltrate his mind?
That's probably how you'd, to be successful, you probably have to think like that. You probably have to think, you know, he made a mistake, Froch punished it for him. Obviously, we all know what Groves thought about the first fight. So to build himself back up in his mind, he's got to sort of try and take what control he can of the situation he is in, and acknowledge his faults. So it's probably the right way to think.
Do you think behind the scenes he's gone a little bit deeper and analysed his performance, and even if it is just to himself, he's acknowledged the fact that basically on the night he wasn't as good as Karl Froch?
I don't know. I think he probably ought to have done. He ought to have, you know, I'm sure he'll have learned from it and learned from the whole experience. I'd be fascinated to know what he thinks the errors were. And you can see the argument, because until the knockout came in the rematch, I thought it was a close fight. It could go either way, even though you kind of expected Froch's momentum to build towards the end. So he could probably take a lot of positives out of the two fights, even though they were both inside the distance defeats.
What chance do you give Rebras of coming in and potentially finishing the career of George Groves?
I can't see it happening. I don't think Froch is, you know, I think with the way Froch subjected Lucien Boutte to like a sustained beating, I don't think Boutte is ever going to be, you know, has been the same or will be the same again after that, because the Groves finish was a little swifter, more clinical. I think he might be able to bounce back from it, so I'd be very shocked if he didn't win this fight.
And the other thing that kind of interested me about this whole thing, even though obviously it's not going to be a big enough fight to attract 80,000 people, the fact that he's had it at Wembley Arena is a pretty bodacious move as well, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. I don't think he'd really want to be going back there. It's interesting. Yeah, I don't. If I was in his shoes, I wouldn't be wanting to go anywhere near Wembley. But yeah, sort of maybe it's a way of confronting the past, dealing with it, getting a win at Wembley. But yeah, I don't know why it's there.
Yeah, because obviously he's now with Sauerland Events, the German-based huge promotional outfit. But they also kind of took on another high-profile British repair job with David Price, with heavyweight David Price. But it's kind of quite a revealing insight into both of those fighters' personalities, in that Price obviously happy to go along and wanted to go back to kind of eight-round level and fight some guys that were clearly below his level, whereas Groves apparently was on the phone at 4 a.m. after being, you know, knocked out by Karl Froch, demanding a route back to world title level as soon as possible.
Yeah, and it's also interesting that with Price, they've given him small fights overseas in Germany so they could rebuild him under the radar, whereas Groves is going right back to the scene of the defeat, and, you know, back to his London hometown, whereas they've kept Price away from the pressure of being in his hometown. So I guess they're just two very different fighters, and maybe George Groves feeds off a big event.
Let's move on to some other news. It's looking increasingly likely that on September 13th, the week before Groves' comeback, that Floyd Mayweather and Marcus Maidana will clash again. It hasn't actually been confirmed, but both via various channels, Mayweather at an American awards show said that they were in talks. Maidana on Twitter said they were in talks. Obviously, we have to take everything that Floyd Mayweather says with a pinch of salt until contracts are signed. However, should that be the situation that plays out, John, is that a fight that appeals to you? Was the first fight competitive enough to warrant the rematch?
No, not to me personally, but I think the general feedback was Maidana did better than expected, and people that were sort of interested to see him go again with Mayweather. Maybe people just enjoyed watching him hit Mayweather below the belt and wherever else he was hitting him. You know, personally, I'm not particularly excited to see a rematch because I think Mayweather will just beat him better than he did the first time. And also, was it really that close? Did you really, like, Mayweather did better than we all thought he would because he managed. Maidana, that guy.
Yeah.
Did you ever think he was really going to win the fight? Like, you may enjoy watching someone get hit below the belt, but it's not going to win you rounds.
No, I think the thing that was interesting to me when I was watching it and scoring it as it was kind of going along from, you know, the comfort of my living room, was that I thought Mayweather had won it fairly comfortably, didn't think there'd be any dispute. But then you do go back and you look at things like the punch stats, and I think there was only, about 8 punches in it over the course of the 12 rounds. I know you can't say who's won a fight just looking at punch stats. But the fact is that Mayweather was hit more than I think he's probably ever been hit in a fight, perhaps with the exception of Jose Luis Castillo fight, or maybe even the Oscar De La Hoya fight. But certainly, I think it was a much better effort from Maidana.
And it was surprising that Maidana managed to sort of get inside so much and get to him so much.
And I would imagine that this for September 13th, it's all easy to make, easy to do, probably fairly easy to sell. But I think, as I've said on a podcast in the past, if I was Floyd Mayweather, which I think I'd probably quite enjoy, but anyway, if I was Floyd Mayweather, at this stage of his career, fair enough if he's 30 or he's 26 or whatever, but the fact that he's 36 or 37 now, clearly the end of his career is much closer than the start. He's been saying from the day he turned professional that he wants to be an all-time great, that Marcus Maidana, the win was convincing enough to move on to something else in order to maybe enhance his legacy.
Exactly, like Cotto for the middleweight title.
Exactly. I even any of the young guys that he hasn't fought would have been perhaps a bit more appealing to boxing fans. But the fact that Maidana's from Argentina again, and it is that whole, I think it's probably an easier one for the MGM Grand to sell.
Yeah.
At this stage, so I understand it, but I would have preferred to have seen him in with someone else.
Who do you think is going to be on the undercard? Because now Mayweather's not working with Golden Boy. How are they going to make the show?
I don't know. It's a really good question, though, John.
Thanks, mate.
Okay, so let's. We just spoke of the MGM Grand. There is, of course, action there at that Las Vegas casino this weekend. Pretty big fight as well. Saw Canelo Alvarez against Erislandy Lara. Alvarez plotting his way back after being dominated, really, I thought, by Floyd Mayweather last year. He has come back since. Angulo, he beat Alfredo Angulo kind of more comfortably than we thought, didn't he? But Lara is not, it's an odd choice. It's almost as if now Oscar De La Hoya, because they're kind of Golden Boy now, saying we didn't want him to take it. They're almost bigging that whole thing up about how courageous and brave Alvarez is for going in with this fight. But I have always wondered from the moment this fight was signed, is there something about Erislandy Lara that Golden Boy know that we don't? Because it is, for me, very, very risky fight for a guy that they're kind of almost really, really pushing for the future.
Yeah. Why would you take this fight when, you know, if you're Golden Boy for Canelo, who could be, you know, your cash cow for the next decade or so, when you really don't, you know, when he's rebuilding from being dominated by Mayweather, he's got a very, very dangerous opponent, or someone who, you know, Alvarez was outboxed by Mayweather, and Erislandy Lara could certainly outbox him. But maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they saw Lara getting put down by Angulo and thought to themselves that if Alvarez can put him down, he'll stop him. But, you know, the flip side is, look, I thought, you know, Alvarez might have dealt with Angulo much better than Lara did. Lara dealt with Austin Trout much better than Canelo did. So, I don't know. Who's going to win?
I don't know. I don't know. I hadn't thought of I'd thought of the Angulo link with them, in that, yeah, Alvarez looked a lot better and Lara was in deep trouble. But I didn't think of the Trout fight, where Lara absolutely dominated Trout, and I was so impressed with Lara in that fight. That you do think that Alvarez will have his work cut out. But, you know, we say that, why are they taking this fight? It's also the fact that they have taken this fight is brilliant, I think, as well. It's to be commended, it's to be admired, because so very often we criticise promotional outfits and fighters for kind of steering a fighter down the easiest path back or the easiest path to the world title, whereas this one is really got potential for it all to go wrong for Alvarez, hasn't it? How does Alvarez approach this fight with Lara? What are his tactics?
Hard to say how you beat him, because you want to get him with those sort of powerful hooks to the jaw, because he can be knocked down, so he can be hurt. But you don't want to be reckless, because you could just find yourself getting picked off, getting outboxed. He could be elusive. So at risk of saying something simplistic, just sort of educated pressure, not going too crazy until you get your chance at some point within those 12 rounds. And then when you get the opening, you've got to go for it and put together those fast and hard combinations that he has to try and go for it then.
Because no one has really... I know he's got that loss, and that loss was to Paul Williams, but that was, I think, pretty much everybody that saw that, apart from the judges that mattered, kind of sided with Lara there, that was an unjust decision. No one has really solved Erisande Lara in a way that Alvarez will hope to, which is what makes it, to me, a really, really interesting fight. My first instinct, in fact, when it was made, was that Lara would win. And it's only, I just think that Golden Boy wouldn't have taken this fight if they were not certain they were going to win it.
Yeah. I was thinking the exact same thing. Like, first off, I thought, you know, Lara could win this. Yeah. And then on second thoughts, it occurs to you that Golden Boy really can't afford Alvarez to lose, because then who else do they have? So there's a lot, you know, there's a lot at stake. Well, a lot of money at stake.
There is a lot of money at stake. Okay, so what are you gonna bet on?
Draw. Controversial draw.
That's not a bad shout, you know. That's not a bad shout at all. When we first started this podcast, which I think was over a year ago now, we did used to mention a cheeky fiver, and what would be, you know, the long odds, and what would be, you know, the best hope of getting the most money from that cheeky fiver. And for this, I'm not sure what the odds would be on a draw, but it's a good shout. It's a good shout. I'd recommend a cheeky fiver on a draw in this one.
I don't know. I might put my cheeky fiver on the Netherlands beating Brazil 8-0.
Do you know what? I think Brazil could be in for an absolute hiding in that match. An absolute hiding. Okay, so, you actually, and I don't think we've mentioned this, a few weeks ago, in fact, it would have been around about June 4th, June 5th, I think I asked you a similar cheeky fiver prediction, and you came back with Miguel Cotto to stop Sergio Martinez in 10 rounds.
It was in 10 rounds.
I'm not sure if anybody, did you get any feedback with that from Twitter? Did anybody take your advice, and were they laughing all the way?
I'm not sure.
To the bank?
I'm not sure anyone did take my advice, but okay. It just shows people should listen to me about stuff.
Okay, so what is the JD forecast for Alvarez Lara? Are you sticking with the draw? What are you doing?
All right, I'm going to stick with the draw.
Okay, like it. This could run and run.
But that's only because I just don't know. Because it's a proper 50-50 fight. I just don't know who's going to win.
I know. Well, it's a good shout. It's a good shout. There's also, of course, some action in Liverpool this week. Nathan Cleverley, Tony Bellew in action. Anthony Joshua's there, Luke Campbell, Callum Smith, Ogogo and Fielding. Now, it is some big names there, isn't there? You are allowed, you're actually covering this, aren't you?
I am.
Okay, but just say all of a sudden you get there, Eddie Hearn, for whatever reason, isn't a fan of this preview by Danny Flexen, and he says to you, right, John, okay, I appreciate that you didn't write this, but
you're only, kill you.
But you're only allowed to watch one fight on this bill. Which fight would you choose?
Joshua Skelton.
Okay, so let's talk about Joshua Skelton. What's Joshua's record? 6-0, is it?
I think so. I think he's going into his seventh fight.
Okay, so he takes on a 46, 47-year-old former European champion, former WBA title challenger when there was only one WBA title. Last time I saw Skelton, he was being knocked out in two rounds by David Price. I think that was the last time that I saw Skelton fight.
He's had a couple since then.
I know he's fought McDermott, and I'm not sure off the top of my head. But what did strike me in the David Price fight, even though he eventually went down in two rounds, he gave Price a decent little test. You know, he landed a few shots. There was a few moments in the first round where Price looked a bit uncomfortable. Do you think he's got enough left to test Joshua?
I would think so. I would think, you know, you'd still back Joshua's power to sort of, you know, end it early, ultimately. But I don't think there's anyone will have fought Joshua the way Skelton fights. He'll sort of jump on him and drag his head into his chest. Like, no one fights like that. So I think he'll make it uncomfortable. I think, as I was saying last week, every prospect has a fight where they don't look good or they suddenly find it difficult. You know, and it's very easy to forget that Joshua isn't that experienced. He didn't have, you know, he's got an excellent amateur pedigree, but he didn't have that many bouts. You know, so David Price was a lot more advanced when he fought Skelton. Obviously, Skelton's sort of probably older and declined a bit by now. So I think it's gonna be interesting in that sense. You know, I also think, because the hopes are so high for Anthony Joshua, you know, the reason I chose that fight as the one to watch is that it's going to be good to watch him at every step along the way as he develops. There's a long, long way to go, but it's going to be a good rise to see.
I think at this point in Anthony Joshua's career, it's hard to criticise Matt Skelton as an opponent. Okay, yeah. He's ageing and what have you, and you probably can question his ambition at this stage. But it's such an improvement on Matt Legg, and I don't mean any offence to Matt Legg in that at all. Who, you know, for as long as it lasted, he gave it a go, didn't he?
He caught him with a shot, didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah.
He caught him with the left hook.
Yeah,
and then it was, well, you know, and then it was game over.
I think we could have a similar. I'm not saying it'll be over in a round, but I think for as long as it lasts, Matt Skelton will give it a go. I don't think you'll see Matt Skelton in there go straight into a shell and just, you know, try and survive or anything like that. I think he'll go out all guns blazing, Matt Skelton.
Yeah. And Skelton hammering Tom Dallas is quite fresh in my mind. It was probably quite a long time ago now.
Yeah.
I just remember he had Dallas bent over the ropes, sort of throwing his punches like a hammer hitting a nail. So I just think, yeah, it's not going to be the most. I'm not saying it's not the, you know, the most closely matched fight on planet Earth, but it's one worth seeing. And the bill as a whole, there are a lot of good names there.
Cleverley and Bellew, will they come through unscathed? I mean, clearly the point of the exercise from Matchroom's point of view is that they do, because there's a big money rematch down the line. But do you think there's any threat in their respective opponents?
With Bellew's opponent, He's got a good. He's got a lot of stoppages on his records, and Bellew has been sort of caught and put down. But I don't think he's as good as Bellew's first cruiserweight fight against Brudov.
Right.
So I think, you know, he might be scathed a little bit, as in he might be caught a bit. But I'd expect him to win. Cleverley should beat his guy as well. There's always a risk when they keep boxers apart to build them later, that fight never happened. Yeah. So I wonder what, you know, if they just stuck Bellew and Cleverley straight in against each other, headlining this bill with all the other, you know, with all the other names on the undercard, that would be a good show. But
it would be.
Maybe they want to build their world rankings or something first before they, before they put them in.
Yeah, I can see why they've done it, and I can see why they are planning it for later on in the year. Because I think other cards have kind of been caught up a little bit and lost in the hangover of Froch Groves 2. And I'll be interested to see if Chisora Fury 2 manages to kind of free themselves from that hangover. But anyway, let's move on to there's good fight, really, really good fight, probably one for the purists. Gary Buckland against Richard Comey. That's an intriguing fight.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that could be outside of Alvarez Lara, obviously, you know, the other end of the spectrum, but it could be the fight of the weekend, because you know, it's a hard one to call. Buckland's been in some great fights, but some tough fights as well. Comey's got this 17-0 record with 17 knockouts, and beating Paul Petrusco was a decent win for him.
Yeah.
So we're going to see what Comey's all about, because this is a real opponent for him. But pretty tough fight for Buckland to take straight after losing to Gavin Rees.
I remember Buckland when he took quite a nasty beating at the hands of John Murray, and it almost looked like a career-ending beating to me from ringside, even though he was still a young man. But, you know, the way he did turn it back round again has been really impressive. But at some point, you would think that all these wars he's been in will start to have an effect.
And the knockout he took from Stephen Smith was a devastating one, a chilling one. But then he bounced back again from there. So.
Yeah.
I wonder if he can keep bouncing back, but you know, maybe he's a, by all accounts, he's a tough guy, and he's certainly fearless. I think he can. He seems like the type who can shake off any sort of, you know, mental doubts and that kind of thing. Just whether it's physically not taking too much from him. Yeah. And I thought, because he was at lightweight when he got, you know, beaten up by John Murray. In a sort of competitive but, you know, brutal fight, I thought he was better suited to super feather.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, he's sticking at lightweight. Maybe that's what, you know, Richard Comey's banking on.
Maybe. Time will tell. And one other, we'll just touch on this before we do call it a day for this week. Frank Buglioni is back after his heartbreaking and largely unexpected loss last time out. You've spoke to Frank, or as you like to call him, the Bug.
The Bug. As he doesn't like to be called.
He doesn't like to be called the Bug. I'd like to be called the Bug, wouldn't you?
If I was called the things you were, Matt.
Okay, so let's not dwell on that. Let's go back to Frank Buglioni. You spoke to him. You spoke to him, I think it was a couple of weeks ago now, wasn't it? So his defeat was in the past. And he was focused on Sam Cousins for the Southern Area title, which on paper to me looks like, and again, no disrespect to Sam Cousins, but it does seem like he's not just gone down a level, he's gone down quite a few levels. Was that necessary, do you think?
Probably, I don't know if it was necessary, but I don't think it's a bad move, really. I think it, you know, it was a stoppage defeat, his first professional defeat. Bringing him back gently makes sense, and it is for a Southern Area title, so it's, you know, it's quite good in that sense. So yeah, I do expect Buglioni to win it in style, but from the point of view of his career, it's not a bad move. But yeah, it probably won't be the most. You know, it could be, if Frank is as mean as he's saying he is now, it could be a one-sided fight.
What went wrong, do you think, for Buglioni? Was he overconfident? Did he approach the fight in the wrong way? Did he completely overlook Kamitsky, or what do you think happened?
I'm not sure he overlooked him, but there were those sort of defensive flaws that Frank had admitted to, that we'd all seen, that he left himself too open. I thought Kamitsky took advantage of them really well, like certainly much better than I was expecting. But then, you know, it's easy to forget that Kamitsky he's been in with some really good people, and he may have looked pretty poor against them, but he was certainly sort of a higher level operator than I was expecting him to be. So he did well, he clearly hit hard, but I don't, you know, the losses happen. If he learns from it on the technical side, which he can do, there are other factors to be encouraged about, as in he let himself get hit a lot, but he took a lot of those punches, which is a sign that he's tough. And it's a sign that he could be an exciting fighter to watch, because he's a big puncher himself. If he can be caught, then he can. The likelihood is that every time he steps up a level, he's going to be in a war. But you know, it's going to be a fun journey to watch, because there could be some right tear ups on the way.
Yeah, he reminds me. He's almost kind of harks back to old school in a way, in that. You know, there's a lot of British fighters of the past. There seems to be kind of too much pressure on a fighter that shows just a little bit of promise that the ultimate destination is a world title. If they don't get that world title, then it's almost deemed as a failure. And too much time and effort can be spent kind of steering them down that path rather than just sticking them in fights that they know is going to be great. From bully only for me, I'm not saying he won't get to world level. I'd be surprised if he was kind of a dominant world champion. However, I've got great admiration for his style, for the way that he goes about his business, and I think that he will be, as you say, if he's allowed to be, one of the most thrilling British fighters we've seen in a long time.
Yeah, he doesn't have to be perfect. I think he's got a great fan base, so the atmosphere at his fights is brilliant. I think they're warm to his personality and also his style, because you know, he likes to go forward, he likes to get stuck in. With hindsight, maybe taking on Kamitsky was quite soon, but I think we'd all rather have seen that fight than a few more tick over jobs.
Definitely. Okay, so that more or less brings us to the end this week. Something else in this week's issue, though, that I will draw your attention to.
Cracking amateur section.
As always, cracking amateur section. So quickly, John, what's the highlight of the cracking amateur section this week?
Great headline from a Scott Fitzgerald feature. It's from an F. Scott Fitzgerald book title.
It's good. Well, you'll have to buy the issue to find out what the headline is. Anyway, another cracking headline here. We mentioned Fury and Chisora rematch a little bit earlier on in the show, but now we have got quite an interesting feature this week where we speak to both of the combatants ahead of their July 26th rematch, and we ask each of them the same question. What did you, and they both give their answers, and it really does, I think it gives a fair representation of their characters, or at least the characters that they choose to show publicly. What did you take from this, John?
Derek Chisora. Do I hate him? No, but I'm going to F him up.
Yeah, exactly.
Like you say, it's a great distillation of their respective characters. Tyson Fury is always interesting. Is always interesting to hear from him. I think it's a great fight, even though we've sort of seen it before. It'll be nice to see it catch on, you know, in more than it has done so far. Because you know, people, I think, outside of sort of boxing hardcore, aren't really talking about it yet. But maybe that will change if one of them does something crazy at a press conference.
Yeah, I think there's also it feels like we've been waiting for this for years, this rematch. In that, I think it was January when I went to a press conference in Islington, and it was announced. And I remember then there was a real buzz about it, the fact this may happen in the summer.
Yeah.
But then, kind of since then, it's kind of fizzled out a little bit.
Yeah, because when they were both on the same bill together, you know, people were talking about it then.
Yeah. No, but I'm really looking forward to it. I really enjoyed their first fight. Chisora was woefully out of shape there, but he still did enough in a few rounds to really get Fury's attention and to show that, you know, okay, maybe, I know I'm not saying he's got the ingredients to beat Fury. I'm not saying he hasn't. But that first fight, even though it was wide on the cards and it was deservedly wide on the cards, there was enough in there to convince me that this sequel is worth watching.
Yeah, especially as they both, I think, improved a lot since then.
Yeah.
Because, you know, their first fight wasn't exactly an exhibition of the sweet science.
No.
But, you know, they went, it was a rumble.
Okay, no doubt we'll talk about that increasingly as the fight gets closer. So we'll leave it at that. Thanks, everyone, for listening to us to ramble on for the third week in a row. Not sure if we'll make it a quartet next week, but who knows?
Fingers crossed.
But yeah, no. So thanks everyone for listening, and two of the Boxing News team will be with you next week.